fighting for America.
The Republican Party is in this big, massive civil war. It's Tea Party versus establishment, libertarians versus social conservatives. There's infighting, conflict, backbiting, discord.
Fighting for Idaho.
I don't want to scare people, but waves of terrorism, stuff that we've never seen or heard before by small groups, much like terrorists, I'm very worried about it, and I'm very worried about an incredibly porous border.
Fighting for you.
Thank you for having this great show on in the morning, because without it, we wouldn't have any real conservative voice out there on the radio.
Voices Mr. Right.
Like me, friend me, and we'll have a great time together.
Kevin Miller in the morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. Welcome to Friday, everyone, at 580 KIDO. Thank you for being with us. And a lot of folks are getting ready for the weekend when we're talking about the NFL. We're talking about the playoffs. Certainly a bunch of Seahawk and Bronco fans in the area. But what about the national title? Joining us now is a young man that we met when we were doing our schools, I think, last year, maybe last spring, head coach of the College of Idaho, the Yotes, if you will. Go Yotes. Mike Morawski with us. Coach, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I think we could talk, you know, you've played in the NFL, you've played in college, you've coached in college, you're coaching in college now. I think we should just turn the segment over to you because of your expertise. let me hit you with this. You have any great stories about your days with the Houston Oilers? You know, love you blue.
The powder blue, that was quite a time. But I did enjoy the time I was there because their quarterbacks at the time were banged up. The starter was Warren Moon, and the backup was Oliver Luck. So it was fun. Good guys, and that was one of the fun things. And my brief stay there, my brief stay at lots of different places, lots of great people in the game of football. And so I really enjoyed my time there in Houston.
Boy, as someone who has dedicated themselves to the game and to educating young people, not only in the game but in life, how special is the game of football? I mean, every Saturday, heck, every Friday, Saturday and Sunday, it seems like it's our secular religion, if you will.
Well, football is, there's something about it. I try to describe it to people, and especially in the year leading up to the bringing back football here at the College of Idaho, and there's just something really visceral about it. It just gets you in the gut, and I think at the fan level it does. It certainly does as a player, and I often have to deal with players who are either have a career-ending injury or have to give up the game for some reason or just graduate from college knowing it's their last football game, and that's a hard thing. And I say, frankly, the feeling never leaves you. You never lose the desire. There's nothing quite like playing in a football game and just the energy, the physicality, and everything. So it really is a meaningful thing that I think fans tap into as well. But for players, coaches, et cetera, it never goes away. So there's something really magnetic about the game.
Coach Morawski, as we talk a little bit about the College of Idaho and starting a program from scratch, and y'all had a lot of great success with a lot of folks in the area, and it's great that we have all these wonderful colleges and universities, but it's great that the local kids can show what they can do on the gridiron as well.
Well, what happened this fall for us and the lead up to it was, in my opinion, absolutely spectacular and super exciting for the region here, the Boise Valley, because 75% of our guys are from Idaho, and it'll probably continue to that. Maybe it'll ebb and flow a few percentage points of the roster, but I think that just makes it interesting for people in the valley, that the community of Caldwell all over the Treasure Valley here. I mean, there's just such great excitement, and I think largely because of the Broncos and their success, and obviously there's some great Vandals fans, and so football has been a part of the culture. There's been successful football, especially at BSU, and they're great, fantastic. I think, you know, one of the top 20 programs in the country for sure. There's just an excitement about it, and then we come in, and most of my time in coaching obviously was at UC Davis, and we went from Division II non-scholarship to Division I AA. But those Division II non-scholarship days were some of the most exciting days ever. I think Chris Peterson would say the same thing. He followed me by a number of years there, but there was one game that I played there against Nevada Reno when they were still Division II, just getting ready to to move on, I still say it was the most exciting environment I've ever been in my life. And I've been in a couple of larger venues, that's for sure. But there is something about it being up close in our little stadium out here, Simplot Stadium. I mean, the fans are close enough to see, touch, and feel the players and the energy and kind of what college football has always been to the idealists of the world and the football purists. There's something special about it, and I think we captured it a little bit, and so there's already great excitement for next year.
You know, as casual fans of college football, and most of us have never played, but we could always give out pointers to the coaches. I know no one has ever done that for you, Coach. Giving you any...
I get all sorts of pointers, and I take them all. I see he's our athletic director, and uh-huh. Some of our boosters said, "Boy, especially if he got calls for third and 15 or more, I'm more than willing to take that advice."
Right, exactly. But you know, the spirit of the game. Are we in danger of losing that? You take a look at Ohio State and Bama. You take a look at Oregon and Florida State. The highest rating in cable television history, and you know, at the college level, it's supposed to be amateur. But is there a danger, a threat, that it could become too commercialized?
I definitely think so. Though, let me say this about the playoff system: it's no surprise at all that people are interested. I think the playoffs it would be for the fans. The bowl system's kind of set up for the sponsors and the old system, and you can tell by the bowl games attendance, there's just not that many full stadiums out there. But once you get to the playoffs and a winner, I think that's the true competition that people want. And obviously it's what Division II and Division III and NAIA and Division I AA do. But to the other part of your question, I do think that. And I have no interest in becoming a Division I coach. I like being a college football coach where I'm dealing with students and faculty and staff and other sports. And my interest is in football becoming integral to the college and becoming special for the whole student body and contributing to the academic mission. It's just fun. I mean, I love it. And I often say I'm not a Division I coach. I'm a college football coach, and I really love what I do. I think I have the greatest job in the world.
Well, I think you do as well. And like I said, we're going to work on getting you a lot of suggestions for that third and 15.
That sounds great.
Now, you know, before we get to the championship game and everything else, what do you make of the success? And I know this is a stretch. We're in Idaho, but, you know, a lot of people will be watching the old Division I AA championship this weekend. I believe it's North Dakota State. They've been there every year against a relatively newcomer, Illinois State.
Well, it's just a great level of football. And I know more about North Dakota State because UC Davis had a long history with those guys and have played them fairly recently too, and they have a great little home field advantage, and they are very, very well coached. I think you find at the 1AA level, especially the upper tier, there's some tremendous coaching going on, and then it's a lot of guys, as our old coach at UC Davis used to say, guys with a chip on their shoulder that think they can play at any level, and of course, you know, the NFL rosters are sprinkled with guys from every level, so there really is some great quality football at that level. So, and I tend to pull for North Dakota State. I just admire their program, and they do a fantastic job. And to have the run they've had is incredible. Though they do enjoy the home field advantage usually throughout the playoffs until the finals.
I was a little bummed out that Eastern Washington wasn't in it this year. I just love the red. You know, imitation's the greatest form of flattery there.
Oh, absolutely. And again, we at UC Davis played up on the Inferno, as mm-hmm. they call it, in Cheney, Washington. But they had a great team and had a great run. It's just, and I think they lost in a fairly close game and had a great year. The Big Sky Conference has been fantastic. Idaho State had a great year. So there's just great levels of football out there. And then for us, we're the only small college team in the state of Idaho, which is so different than Oregon or California, and certainly the Midwestern states. So there's just a interesting mix of things that has added to our success and the interest in the area, I think.
Coach Mike Morosky with us, College of Idaho. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. You know, it's fascinating because we talk about news and politics, but your profession has become quite the business, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that have said to you that, hey, coach, you're going to build this program. We don't want to lose you, and you have people that, because of the economics of the game, that they move on to other places, most notably, you know, the head coach at North Dakota State. Here was a guy that was an institution. Really, it was fascinating how he would go to Miami and to other places and get those players to come up there. And after the culture shock of the cold, they really bought into the academic process and, you know, did a big profile on him. And then Wyoming scooped him up. So, I mean, what's the mentality of the modern-day coach as far as, you know, the old days of one guy stayed one place and built an institution?
Well, I think it's there's a couple different things there. Certainly, because of the importance of football or in society, and now it's become big entertainment. There's coaches making a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money to be made at even a place like Wyoming. I don't know what Coach Bowl is making there, but I know he's making probably double what he made at North Dakota State. So there is for the ambitious to there's the opportunity to move further and further up the ladder, and then Jim Harbaugh's contract is pretty extraordinary, and has changed fast because I coached against him when he was at the University of San Diego, a Division I non-scholarship school, very very good program, but he was there for 3 years and did a great job, and then Stanford 49ers, and now to Michigan and the top paid college coach. So it's just extraordinary. Now, there's also, with that, there's the firing mentality, you know, the scapegoat mentality of college presidents and boards of trustees and athletic directors where, hey, if you don't produce when you're getting paid that kind of money, we're going to run you out. So it's become kind of a brutal business. I mean, it's not just coaches leaving, but it's you win or you're gone. So it's interesting that if you get to a place, perhaps even like Boise State, I don't know for sure what their culture. I think Coach Harsin seems very, you know, dream job and that sort of thing. But if he's super successful, he'll get opportunities at other places. And then if he's not successful, he'll get run out of town. And I think coaches begin to know that and realize you just have to do the best job you can. And it's always a little disconcerting to me that it's boosters sometime with deep pockets that control the hiring and firing sometimes.
Well, and what people don't understand is that, you know, you have a family, you have a mortgage, you have to pay the bills like everybody else. And it, you know, on one hand, we want the coach goes to the player and says, look, I want you here, I'm going to be here. And then we expect the coach to turn down an economic opportunity that could better themselves because they've made a commitment. And then all of a sudden, the, money drives everything. The donations dry up and the coach, well, you were a good boy, but you've got to go. It's, you know, it's funny. I have a gentleman in Eagle. His name is Shaw. He runs a pharmacy and he always says to me, he goes, you know, Kevin, I would never do your business, but when we go inside beyond the glamour and the fame of your business, it's pretty cutthroat.
It really is. And I think you have to just, I mean, I tend to be philosophical about it and say, that's just the way it is. That's what, it was inevitable because we live in an entertainment-oriented society, and football is big entertainment. So I don't have any problem with coaches making a lot of money or players because it's what the market bears. But it does trickle down, and there's a lot of it's not an easy job. It's a fun job, but those other stress points of having to please certain people, especially if they're nameless and faceless, where you're just trying to match up to some standard, is always difficult and everything. But sports just happens to be more public. It's just, you know, in living color. I mean, coaches, when they get together, will sometimes joke, boy, and my livelihood's in the hands of 18, 19, and 20-year-old guys. You
right.
know? So it's always difficult. But that's the fun and the challenge of it. But that's where I don't have any desire to bounce around, and I think that's where I understand it, and that's kind of the somebody once told me, well, Jim Zorn, who was a very successful quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks and coached all over the place, including was a head coach with the Washington Redskins, but he once told me one of his many stops when he was at Utah State. I think he said, I think to get hired in a job, coaches actually like to hire guys who've been at a number of places. And I thought, that's interesting. That's just not my deal. I was at Davis for 25 years, and I plan on being here till the end of my career. You never know what for sure is going to happen. But I just like being in one place where you get to know people and get to know an institution. And so what I'm saying is you have to know what you want and who you want to be, I think. And that's sometimes difficult for young guys. But take a guy like Mike Sanford at Boise State. I mean, he's just a great, young, upcoming coach. And I think that staff is full of guys like that. And once you have some success, then people come knocking. And he has a track record of being at Stanford, and the Vanderbilt coach has ties at Stanford and knew Mike, and it's just no surprise. But I think fantastic that he's sticking around for a while and wants to, you know, be part of building something here at Boise State. So he, at least as a young guy, has knows kind of what he wants in the short run.
Well, Coach, hang on. More with Coach Morawski next. Kevin Miller in the Morning coming up.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning. Coach Mike Morawski with us, College of Idaho here. Coach, hit me with it. What do you think is going to happen Monday?
I think I'm kind of pulling for Oregon, and I think they'll give Ohio State some real trouble.
Ohio State's in trouble. That seems I guess we could have said that about Alabama against Ohio State. Do the Buckeyes have a chance?
You know, I think they do. I mean, they have all those teams have a conglomeration of the greatest talent, but I think Oregon will put some stress on them. My analysis of the Ohio State-Alabama game, I was a little bit surprised at a number of the mistakes. It wasn't a super clean or dominant performance. Great football game, but just lots of back and forth, lots of mistakes, few penalties, few turnovers, that sort of thing. And Oregon has the capability, like they showed against Florida State, where if you make a couple mistakes on a couple series, you find yourself 24 points behind in a hurry. So I just think they have a good mix of guys. I think Oregon's better on defense than people give them credit for. But I always hope for a great game, too. I'd love to see an overtime thriller, you know.
How has the Scorigan offense changed the face of college football, and is it really different from the old K-Gun offense in the early 90s with the Buffalo Bills?
I think it's similar. I think it's some of those same things, and I think what a number of college coaches have been able to do is empower the quarterback either by signaling from the sideline or having a special guy, and it seems that Marcus Mariota is the best of what Oregon has ever had, and that's why I think it's all coming together for him. But in terms of changing, it just really makes it tough on the defensive side. It's just not hard to line up, but it just cuts down the variety of things that the defenses can do. And there's lots of reasons for that. You have to be willing to have your own defense on the field for a long time. So TCU, I think, is an interesting study. Their coach, Gary Patterson, one of the great defensive coaches in the country, he forever wanted a slower offense so the defense could shorten the game, basically. You know, run the ball, run the clock, and then you got a great defense, and then they'd lead the country in defensive statistics. But I think what he found is he couldn't win the big, big games, and so he went to the more of an air raid, fast-paced offense. And though some friends of mine that know Gary and coach them, part of the reason was so he wanted a fast-paced offense so he could learn to defend it better. So that's he's just an interesting personality in college football, but I think it worked for him. And TCU was so impressive in their win over Mississippi. I think people have to think, boy, maybe they might be the best team in the country too. But back to the fast offense, it just puts such pressure, especially when you got great skill and you got guys in space, fast receivers or running backs on bubble screens and option football. It's just, it's exciting too. I think it's fun for the fans.
Well, could we be seeing, let's say if your prediction holds correct and the Ducks win, not a renaissance, but the Ducks becoming the perhaps whether it's the dominant force or the new in thing in college football? And I see that. I've studied the program since Chip Kelly got there, and it just seems that, you know, you have your traditional powers, you have, you know, the glamorization of the SEC. And then if you're looking for an alternative, you have Gary Patterson, as you said, that's done a great job with TCU, and perhaps they might be there one day. But are the Ducks the alternative to, you know, business as usual?
You know, I think so. And the one, you know, because I hadn't really studied Oregon that much because I was kind of in a different frame of mind. My background was in the NFL, and while we were at Davis, it was more of a NFL style of offense. And but when we got here to the College of Idaho, we realized we're going to have all freshmen. We may not be able to match up at all up front. How are we going to move the ball was what the question we began to ask. And we realized we have to create mismatches. We have to get two on ones, double teams, if you will, and be willing to run the quarterback. So we recruited quarterbacks who could run. And so we got into this option and spread, and it's new for me. But then we tied into some Oregon film and studied them and realized, wow, these guys don't just have an offense where they're throwing it around and going fast. They are very, very well coached. That's some of the fun stuff that we as coaches get to do, is different than a TV broadcast, watching and rewatching film and seeing why and how people are doing what they're doing. And we realized, one, Chip Kelly is one heck of a coach and putting that system in order. And I think what I saw this year of Coach Helfrich is they're better this year than they were last year in some of their design and detail. So there is a spread offense craze and fast offense, and I think people will move to that, I think. But the real intrigue of it is, how do you do it better than anybody else? And I think that's what Oregon somehow is doing. It still gets down to coaching at its purest form of teaching and creativity and finding a way to get it across to the players so that they can execute it at a fast pace. But I think Oregon is incredible and maybe a click or two ahead of other people. And I think you have to be. Plus, they got great athletes. They got great speed. So they're just as fast as the fastest teams in the country.
Coach Murawski, College of Idaho, go Yotes. We appreciate it. And we'd love to have you back, sir.
Thanks, Kevin. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Have a good day.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye-bye. There we have it, Coach Murawski with us. It is 7:33. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And thank you for joining us, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580KIDO. Once again, I think this is a record this week when we're talking about our on-air talent from the big Fox News radio, and that's Rachel Sutherland. Rachel, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, is there a difference between the weekends in Washington and the weekdays? I mean, does everybody really leave town and go back to their home district, as we've heard?
Oh, yeah. Well, it depends on what part of Washington you're in, but it does quiet down. Certainly around Capitol Hill, there's basically nothing to do. It's pretty dead on the weekends. But you head on over to DuPont Circle or Adams Morgan, it's a pretty lively place. But I haven't seen too many lawmakers hanging out in the bar in DuPont Circle.
So unlike, let's say, in Meridian or Nampa or Boise, you probably could get a good restaurant on the weekends because nobody's there.
Again, it depends on where you go. There's some really great restaurants up on Connecticut Avenue. I was just there last weekend. I went to National Theater, and so there's some restaurants, DuPont Circle area, Adams Morgan. Of course, Georgetown, you can always find a great place to eat. But at Capitol Hill, I know you're out of luck. The hot dog stands are even gone.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Keystone. That has been something that has been talked about for quite some time. Keystone, Keystone, Keystone. The president not too happy about Keystone.
He's not. In fact, there is a veto threat coming from the White House over this project. And at this point, it looks like today the House is expected to pass the Keystone XL pipeline legislation. It would be then moving on to the Senate, where it would be debated on the floor early next week, just as Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had promised. It appears that it would pass the Senate fairly handily. And then head to the White House, where this veto threat would probably be made good on. And then the task is to see if Congress can come up with this two-thirds majority. So they're reaching out to Democrats, trying to get them on board, people like Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. But that's still unclear whether or not they can get the numbers.
Yeah, well, and as we talked about before, here at 580 KIDO and on Fox News Radio, if you cross party lines, you could get in trouble. Of course, it's a lot easier getting in trouble when the other part is the majority, because the minority leaders don't have much as a big of a stick as the majority leaders do.
Right, and you look at just what happened this week with Boehner's revenge and kicking some people off of the Rules Committee. And that would be something that no one will want to get in the way of. But I don't know that Nancy Pelosi would take action against a Democrat or someone over in the Senate would face any kind of consequences. But, I mean, look, I mean, someone like Senator Manchin, he's known to be independent and stand on his own 2 feet, so I don't think he's too worried about that.
Well, in West Virginia, trends red anyway, so we'll...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And West Virginia, you would think folks there would be very much in favor of a pipeline that could create, 42,000 jobs. You know, the Obama administration is arguing these jobs are temporary, but all construction jobs, by and large, are temporary, and construction workers make their living that way, and they know that. So that's one concern. Also, the White House is concerned about the environmental impact. They say this tar sands oil will have a devastating impact on the environment. Now, there is a court case in Nebraska, which I believe we just had some kind of ruling on, and it does also impact the Keystone pipeline. If I could just pull up my information here. And so the Nebraska High Court has vacated a lower ruling on the Keystone XL pipeline route. So it's a victory for pipeline proponents. Basically, it allows the route to go forward. So it looks like, as far as the court challenge in Nebraska, looks like it's in the favor of those who want the Keystone pipeline.
Well, and, then some of the critics are going to say, this is great for the Chinese, this is great for the Japanese, because it's just going to expedite the exporting of Canadian oil over there and a dash of American refineries down there in Texas, and it's not going to have the economic impact. And I think even the president has alluded to that, economically, after the construction jobs, it's not going to do much for us. It'll be interesting to see how the Republicans trying to get other parties to vote will respond to that.
Yeah, but they do need to address some real concerns like that. The environmental impact studies, well, they've been pretty conflicting, so maybe those Democrats don't need to, or Republicans don't need to really address. But when it comes to the impact on the economy and jobs, that's a big deal. And you have to weigh that against the impact on the environment. And the president did make definitely some promises to environmentalists that he might want to keep in his last 2 years of office.
Well, are you on talk show watch this weekend?
I don't know. The weekend's already here. Oh, I
guess
I will
be. You haven't been given your assignment yet?
I'll probably get it late this evening at some point, and I just roll with the punches.
Speaking of which, anything that will be starting next week as far as punches go?
On Capitol Hill, the Keystone Pipeline, but also probably more argument over Obamacare, because we have this bill that the House passed yesterday that lowers the threshold for employers being mandated to provide health care from 40 hours to 30 hours a week. So there's that. And there's also the fight looming coming next month over immigration and the president's use of executive orders to shield millions from deportation. You have the idea of pulling Homeland Security funding, which, of course, overseas immigration, and that would set up we think there's a fight over the Keystone Pipeline. No, you have not seen anything yet.
Well, I guess that's the one constant in Washington, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, never a dull moment except on Saturday night on Capitol Hill.
Exactly, and John Boehner will, I guess, continue to seek revenge.
No, I think before he's kind of shrugged off these sort of challenges. This time he did take some action, remove some Florida congressmen from the Rules Committee. I don't know. He might be done, though. I haven't heard of anything else happening. But definitely the message he's sending out is, don't mess with me.
Do you believe that there's a concerted effort to limit the, from your reporting, that perhaps, and you know, there's a concerted effort to limit the pull of the so-called Tea Party folks?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I think that there is definitely an effort to keep the lid on them somewhat. Tea Party folks are very vocal. They have a lot to say. They're passionate. And so, and with this latest kind of insurrection, they had 25 votes, and they only needed 29, so they got kind of close. And that's why I many would say, you know, Speaker Boehner maybe took the action that he did. This was getting a little too close for comfort for him.
You have a great weekend, Rachel.
You too, Kevin.
Take care. Our great friend Rachel Sutherland from Fox News Radio. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO.
I never thought this day would ever happen. I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. You know, if I help him, he's going to help me.
Well, is something too good to be true? And who's she talking about? John Boehner? Mike Simpson? We'll tell you next. 33 right now in Nampa. Kevin Miller in the morning at 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work safe.
Everybody in Cleveland know minority got Obama fall. Keep Obama in president, you know. He gave us a fall.
Making sense of a senseless world. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO. Idaho's place to talk.
Oh, my goodness. Our great friend Ray Jr. loves that Oingo Boingo. I think he's probably the only one that... that knows that. He loves that. Anyway, Kevin Miller with you here. Governor, good morning.
Thank you and good morning.
Good to have you with us here at 580 KIDO.
Thank you and good morning.
Okay, that was from the governor's news conference yesterday. We'll get to the governor. He made a couple statements. One thing that I would love to get some emails about, or you can face me, Kevin Miller, or tweet me at Kevin Miller Show, is this statement here.
We're the reddest of the red state in the United States of America. Let's stay that way. Thank you.
There we go. The governor talking about Idaho. And do you feel that way? By the way, our friend Martha, very upset with me, and I love it when Martha gives me the emails. Look, if you can't take constructive criticism, as a friend of mine just once said to me, look, you got to be able to take direction. Here we have Kevin Miller talking trivialities like football instead of the fact that a free country, France, has been taken over and eaten from the inside by numerous Muslims who have moved in and established their own country inside a country where they have their own laws and are not subject to those of the country which they inhabit, which said does not even try to govern them, which said country doesn't try to govern them. Now they're seeking by fear and murder to control the press in that country, which means control of the whole country. Where is tolerance turned into subjugation? Blah, blah, blah. Well, you're right about that. But France, just like America, apparently before these attacks have happened, too afraid to stand up for their rights, the rights of people to live accordingly. And when you start giving people passes, when does it stop? When does it stop indeed? All right, let's get back to the issue at hand. The president had a unique proposition yesterday.
What I'm going to be talking about in Tennessee is, first of all, what a great job Tennessee has done in all kinds of education reform. But what I'm also going to do is announce a proposal that I'm going to be making to make sure that community college is accessible for everybody. Put simply, what I'd like to do is to see the first 2 years of community college free for everybody who's willing to work for it.
Now, we've heard this before, right?
Everybody in Cleveland know minority got Obama fall. Keep Obama in president, you know. He gave us a phone.
He gave you a phone.
Do more.
How did he give you a phone?
You sign up. If you on food stamps, you on Social Security, you got low income, you disability.
You get a phone. Not just a phone, but free health care, a free mortgage, free this, free that.
I never thought this day would ever happen. I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. You know, if I help him, he's going to help me.
There we have it. And by the way, you'll be able to keep your doctor. You'll be able to get your mortgage paid. Look, every politician promises things. That's why they're a politician. And I applaud the president. And look, I applaud the president for trying to make education free. And I think, again, my opinion, not yours, but your opinion, welcome at 580-5436 or Kevin at KIDOAM.com. I truly believe that the president now is playing for the resume, that the president now is playing for I got us out of Iraq. I got us out of Afghanistan. I lowered unemployment to historic levels. The stock market blew up in a good way during my administration. I've made it easier for kids to, in fact, go to college. And we hear it now where he's trying to, you know, look at community college, whether or not, I mean, who's against free education? Just take a look at the state of Idaho and the big controversy that's going to happen with us when we're looking at funding education. But how can you say I'm not in favor of community college for everyone? And in some states where you've had people that have been unemployed and they have a big integral community college system, if you're unemployed and you were laid off from a certain sector, the state, by the way, these states actually running in deficits, but the states actually pick up the cost of community college. So when the president says, I'd like to see that for everyone, well, folks, we have a problem right now. It's called the money tree is out of leaves, right? The money tree out of leaves. So we need to take a look at what we're going to do to replenish that. Now, big story today that the Republicans in the Hill magazine and in Congress looking to raise the federal gas tax. And if we do that, what was all the change that we voted for? To have less change in our pocket? I love how politicians think. Here's the lead at 580KIDO. Record low gas prices across the U.S. have given rise to fresh talk in Washington of raising the federal gas tax for the first time in 20 years, with leading Republicans now saying a hike must not be ruled out. Boy, you love the Republicans, don't you? Read my lips. No new taxes. No new taxes. There you have it. Yet now we're talking about that the gas tax could be a possibility. The president wants to fund the community college program. Now, for those of us that went to college for a few years, does that mean that we get a refund? Most likely not. I would just love it. And this is a refrain that you that have to meet payroll or have to meet your bills, and we all have to do that. I just for once love to have the federal government live under the same rules that Idaho has to. That is, you have to meet your budget, right? 758-580-KIDO. Let's get you to work safe. 759, Kevin Miller in the morning. We've talked about the political outlook, but what about the economic outlook when we're taking a look at the country and in particular the Gem State? That's a good way to start the morning, right?
Thank you and good morning.
I agree with that, right, Governor Otter? Good morning.
Thank you and good morning.
All right, 7:59. We'll take a look at that, plus your phone calls on the issues that matter to you. Good morning.